This special episode is a workshop on ballot access petitioning presented by Green Party U.S. co-chair Garrett Wasserman. This workshop is part of a campaign training series presented by the Green Socialist Organizing Project's Education Working Group. More information can be found at greensocialist.net/campaign-trainings.
Everyone, and welcome to our Green Socialist campaign training stream. And for this edition, it is on petitioning and ballot access. So this is a very important topic for Greens across the country to think about, as many state parties are right now in the middle of their petitioning and ballot access work. So if you're looking for a way to get involved in your local Green Party and support your local Green candidate, this is a great way to do it. So, you know, welcome everyone and hope you're having a nice day so far. I'll be trying to monitor comments here. So, you know, if you have any comments, you can drop them in the chat or on YouTube. I'm hearing myself. Echoes. Okay. All right. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and get started here. So my name is Garrett Wasserman. It's nice to see everyone here. And I am a current National Green Party of the United States Steering Committee co-chair. And in the past, I have worked with my local and state party, the Green Party of Pennsylvania, on what we called our Green Wave team, which is the team that helped candidates work for ballot access. So I have been involved in ballot access in my state party for a few election cycles now. So it's, you know, it's been interesting to learn stuff. And then in my national co-chair role, I kind of, you know, I get the reports and kind of hear about keeping tabs on ballot access work in all of our state parties. So, you know, it's interesting to kind of see that perspective into, you know, how the Green Party is doing nationwide. So, you know, this presentation is about petitioning and ballot access. It's tips for building a petitioning team for your grassroots campaign to be on the ballot. So I've used the word petitioning and ballot access a bunch of times, and maybe you're not even entirely sure what that means here. So what we'll do is divide this presentation into about three sections. The first one is talking about what is ballot access and what does petitioning mean? You know, what am I even talking about here? And we'll talk about the state and local and federal laws that apply to ballot access. Just a brief overview. And then after that, we'll talk about how to do petitioning as an individual. So that's if you're interested in volunteering, what you can sort of expect, right? If you contact your state party or you contact your local Green candidate and say, I'm ready, I want to help, I want to be a petitioner, you know, what does that mean? What sort of work would you do? What would you expect, right? So we'll talk about some advice on what to expect that first time you do it. And then our last section will be advice for coordinators. So this is folks who maybe want to take an extra step in volunteering for a candidate for office or for your state party. And this is where you're not just doing the petitioning yourself as an individual, but you're coordinating you know, other volunteers. You're making sure that all of the volunteers are working together, that they have the supplies they need and all that stuff. And that's a very important role too, especially many of our states that have, you know, big ballot access requirements. And so we need, you know, a big coordinated team in order to be able to do it successfully. So that's our three parts today. So the first thing to start with at the top of this slide here is ballot access. What do I mean when I say ballot access? What that means is we're referring to the laws that govern how candidates qualify for and apply to be placed on the election ballot. So there's laws in every state, you know, 50 states plus DC. So 51 different elections happen. And the way the elections roll in the US is kind of interesting, because even though we talk about the election, you know, the midterm election, the presidential election, things like that, there actually is no one single election. What we have is actually 51 different elections that are all carried out according to their own laws and their own rules, and sometimes their own time frame. And the only thing they have in common is that, you know, they all vote on election day in November, right? particularly when it comes to presidential elections. Municipal elections could be their own, you know, set some other day. But that's about it. So the right way to think about elections in the U.S. is not that there's one election, but that there's actually 51 different elections. Each state has its own elections process that we have to be aware of. So when we talk about building the Green Party nationwide, we're really talking about building 51 state Green Parties to make sure that each state is following its own laws and timeline and schedule and all that stuff. So that's part of the complexity here that we'll talk about. So that's ballot access. It's the rules that govern the election and how candidates apply to be on the ballot, how you get your name listed as a Green Party candidate on the ballot. There's different laws in different states. Petitioning is the process that we use to apply for ballot access, to get our candidates and our party on the ballot in those states. And it's referred to as petitioning because for the most part in most states, the main requirement is that we need voters to sign a petition. And we get a certain number of voters to sign a special petition that goes to the state government that basically says, you know, these people want to see this candidate on the ballot in November or whenever the election is. And we meet all the requirements to be on the ballot, right? So it's a whole packet that includes, you know, some legal forms, some affidavits that say, you know, I declare that I can run for office. You know, for example, sometimes offices have like an age limit. You might have to be 18 or 25 or 35 or something like that to run for office. So you fill out the form saying I'm qualified. You include the petition saying you have a certain number of people that want you on the ballot. And then in theory, you're approved to be on the ballot. But that process can be more complicated. So that's what we mean by ballot access and petitioning. So let's start with our first section here to do a little bit more talk about what the state and local laws look like. So we'll talk about the laws and rules for petitioning that vary between states and even between cities. Well, what we'll talk about is the commonalities, I should say. Some of these rules can vary between states and cities. So, you know, I'm not a legal expert on all 51 election laws, right? So, you know, I have to add the caveat here of make sure that you check with your campaign, with the candidate that you want to support, or check with your state party if there's any special rules or laws that you should be aware of. Always check that when you're signing up to volunteer. And they'll probably have their own little presentation or training or something like that for you. But what we'll talk about here is the very common stuff that most petitioning systems work like this. And it's only like, you know, minor changes on like timeline or something like that. So we'll talk about the state election laws that are in common. We'll talk about there's been some Supreme Court rulings that affect the petitioning process. And we'll talk about ballot access equity. All right, so first of all, the ballot access laws, there is, it's important to know that there isn't a federal standard. Like I had said, it's really 51 different state elections. There's not really any federal standard or rules or whatever on how the elections work or the ballot access works or the petitioning works. If you run for a federal office, if you run for Congress, for example, or for president, there is the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, that oversees those candidates, but it's mostly in like a campaign finance sort of thing, right? Like making sure you're filing the right forms to declare how much money you've raised and things like that. It's not setting ballot access requirements for the states. Each state can kind of do its own thing. And so that's what we have. We have 51 states that all have their own rules and sets of laws. So it can be a little bit complicated to figure this out on a nationwide scale. These ballot access requirements vary a lot between the states. Like I said, most of the states do it by collecting signatures on a petition, but the amount of signatures you need varies wildly. Some states, it's only a few. Some states, it's, you know, quite literally some of the highest requirements in the entire world in some of our states. We'll get to that in a moment. So generally, ballot access laws consist of some combination of two things. You need to have that petition with signatures from registered voters. Sometimes in some states, the signatures have to come specifically from people who are registered to vote as a Green Party member. But not all states require that. Sometimes it's just anyone who's a registered voter for any party or an independent can sign your form. So that's one of those little differences you have to make sure with your state. The other thing is that very often many states will require, along with this petition, you have to file ballot access filing fees. And again, the filing fees are also a wide range, you know, between like a small copying fee of, you know, $50 or something like that, versus some states it goes up to like, I think Oklahoma was like a $35,000 filing fee. Like if you don't have $35,000, you're not on the ballot. That's it. So, you know, you have to raise a lot of money to even be on the ballot in some states. So these are the challenges we face as the Green Party, that we have to have enough volunteers and all to go out and collect these signatures on petitions. We have to raise enough money to pay the filing fees, especially in certain states. And another complication on top of this is that when we're collecting signatures, you don't get to collect signatures all year round. And just whenever you meet the right number of signatures, then you file it. Most of the state laws actually have a window of time where the signatures are valid. So that means you have to collect your signatures between one date and another date. And if you collect them outside that date, they don't count. They don't count toward that. So for example, in Pennsylvania, when we collect our ballot access petitions, we're not even allowed to start collecting signatures on our petition forms until after the Republicans and Democrats deadline to file to be on the ballot is already over. So when they're out petitioning and they're out getting on the ballot, we're not even allowed to collect signatures. We're not even allowed to do that. If we tried to collect signatures, they would just be invalid. They would get thrown out in court. They would say, oh, these don't count. So we're not even allowed to start petitioning until usually around March. And then we have March until August 1st in Pennsylvania to collect signatures. And that's a longer window. That's a few months. Some states it's more like, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or something like that. So it, I think Arizona or something has to collect the signatures a year ahead of time. So if you want to be on the ballot in 2022, they had to have already filed the signatures, which means they're starting the process now for making sure that they're on the ballot next year. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of complications on when to collect signatures and all too, in addition to the number of signatures and the ballot access filing fees. So this isn't necessarily, you know, you don't have to be an elections law expert or anything to be a volunteer, right? Like you don't have to know all the details here, but just kind of making you aware of the challenges that we face in doing ballot access work, really for any candidate, but especially for the Green Party. So I think we talked about some of these things. We talked about ballot access inequity, which is basically that the Greens often face much more difficult requirements to get on the ballot than Republican or Democratic candidates. And of course, that's by design. It's, you know, they want to make it a duopoly. They want to make it hard for us to be on the ballot. And here's some of the ways that they do that. They can crank up the number of signatures that's required for the ballot. They can have a short petitioning period, like I was saying, where you only have a few weeks to collect a huge amount of signatures. Sometimes there's huge filing fees. In Pennsylvania, one thing they do is the paper size. If you run as a Democrat, you can print out your petition for people to sign from a little home printer. Just you print it out on like a one-page regular letter size piece of paper, and you have your petition. You're ready to go. If you're an independent or a Green candidate running for office, you can't just print it out on regular size paper. You have to use legal size paper. So instead of the normal 8.5 by 11 paper, you have to use 8.5 by 14. If you don't use legal size paper, it can get thrown out. All the signatures on that form won't count because you didn't use the right size paper. And, you know, we can, of course, print it letter size, but it's something to be aware of that you can't just print it at home on regular standard paper. You have to have a printer that supports legal size paper. You have to have legal size paper. You know, most of the time we just go to a copy place and print a bunch of copies and hand them out. And so, you know, it's It's just a hurdle just to be annoying, right? But we can overcome it. So, but there's paper size. Sometimes filing location is a problem. So for example, if you're running for state office, you might have to file at the state capitol. In Pennsylvania, our capital is Harrisburg, and that's like a 3-4 hour drive away from where I live in Pittsburgh. So if you want to run for state representative, you have to make sure not only that you collect the signatures, that you use a legal size paper and all that stuff, but you have to make sure that you set aside a day to drive to Harrisburg and file it, because you can only file it physical signatures on physical paper, handed in person. They won't accept faxes. They won't accept copies. You can't just mail it to them or whatever. You have to hand it in person in their office. And this was something that actually bit us in 2020, that the Democratic Party kicked the Green presidential nominee, Howie Hawkins, off the ballot in Pennsylvania because of exactly that. One of the forms that we had to file was filed by fax machine because the government office was closed. It was closed due to the pandemic. The pandemic had started. The governor issued an order saying all public offices should be closed to the public because there's an ongoing pandemic, and all paperwork should be filed electronically. And we consulted with lawyers about it. We said, is it okay to fax in? Did we get all the paperwork in and all this stuff? And they said, yeah, it'll be fine. The Democratic Party sued in court, and the Democratic majority state Supreme Court said, oh no, the governor's order for electronic forms, that applied to everything except elections law. You still had to file that in person. So, be aware that you might have to file in person and do the filing location. And maybe you need to make an appointment to make sure that someone's there to pick it up or whatever. So, do what you got to do, right? And speaking of, very often we get legal challenges in court. So we have to raise money for hiring lawyers and fighting it. And in many states in 2020, we actually did win in court, and we did get green candidates on the ballot. But unfortunately, not in every state. So we have to be aware of the complications and make sure that we're doing it correctly. So these are all hurdles that make it harder to run as a green candidate, but they're not impossible. And really, if we're trying to build a movement to win, to really make systemic change, we need to organize a mass party anyway. We need to organize a mass working class party. And if we have a mass working class party, we can knock out these requirements pretty fast. So I think the right way to think about it is not to despair over this, but to instead say we can beat it. We have beaten it in the past. We can continue to beat it. And if we keep growing our movement, we will not only beat these requirements, but we will get an office, and we will make the changes that we need to. So because of these things, I think it's important for us to acknowledge the ballot access inequality in all of our green campaign work. So if you're running for office, make sure you talk about fixing ballot access to make it fair for every candidate, no matter what party you are, even if you're an independent or whatever. Fair ballot access has to be an important part of reforming our elections, in addition to ranked choice and proportional voting and campaign finance and all this stuff. Ballot access equality has to be an important issue that Greens are talking about all the time. Like I said, it's an important part of our overall elections thing. We have to change our election system to make it more fair to support green candidates running for office. And not just Greens, but any party and independent candidates. If we want a election system that better reflects and represents communities as a whole, we have to change to a multi-party system. We have to change to something that uses ranked choice voting, that uses proportional representation to make sure that the folks elected represent their communities. Proportional representation using multiple winners per district is usually the best way to accomplish that, to make sure that every community has a representative win in each district, because there's multiple winners per district instead of just one person winning per district. But we have to make ballot access work too, because ranked choice doesn't work if you don't have more than two candidates or two parties on the ballot, right? The ranked choice does nothing if you don't actually have a choice on the ballot. So when we talk about elections reform, it has to include ballot access equity. And you know, while it's particularly hard to run as a Green and independent candidate, we have to also point out that this is starting to happen in primaries too, that primary candidates are getting legal challenges. Primary candidates are having to collect more signatures and raise more money and things like that. So elections reform and ballot access equity is not just something that affects Greens. It's going to affect everybody. We have to have a fair election system for everybody. So, talk to everyone else, to Democrats, to Republicans, to Libertarians, whoever, about the need to have fair ballot access laws and ranked choice and worse representation and all these things. All right. So, that's important for how the election laws are covered. One thing that we should keep in mind is that there's been lawsuits against all this stuff. So Greens have worked, even with Libertarians sometimes, sometimes the Greens have filed their own lawsuits. But we've filed lawsuits to lower signature counts and to make ballot access more equitable. And we've won some of those cases. So in some states, requirements are lower because Greens have been fighting. So, you know, again, it's not a place for despair. We keep up the good fight, right? So we have lower requirements in Pennsylvania now for some offices because of past rulings. And so, you know, we're keeping it up. One thing to keep in mind is that the U.S. Supreme Court in 1975 issued a ruling in McIntyre versus Ohio that said that canvassing and distributing political literature and, basically talking to people about politics, including getting people to sign your petition and all, is protected First Amendment free speech. So it's very important to keep that in mind that when we're working on ballot access, it is protected First Amendment speech. So you have a right, a U.S. Supreme Court constitutional right to talk to people about the Green Party and to ask people to sign your petition and things. And you don't necessarily need a permit or to ask permission or anything like that in order to do it. You can just ask your neighbors. You can go and knock their doors and say, hey, I want to talk to you about the Green Party. And, would you sign a petition? And maybe that's not the best way to do it. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you do have a right to do this petitioning. And a lot of folks maybe don't know that that's the case. So you have a right to canvass and do this. And of course, you have to make sure that you're doing it right. So, but we'll talk more about that as we get there. The main thing is that you have a right to to petition in public, right? In any public space. But you can't go into private spaces. So you can't walk into businesses or something like that and ask people to sign. You would need permission first in that scenario. But if you're in a public space, if you're on a sidewalk or in a park or something like that, go for it. And even going door to door is totally fine as long as they don't have a posted sign saying that they don't, no canvassing or whatever it is. All right. So that's kind of our overview of election laws, right? So that you kind of know what, when we talk about ballot access, when we talk about petitioning, what to expect, what we're talking about, which is, collecting signatures, raising money to pay ballot access fees, all the different hurdles, making sure that we're collecting signatures in the right way, with the right size paper, filing in the right place, all that stuff. So these are all important things to keep in mind. And the details vary per state. So you'll want to ask your state party or the campaign you're supporting for more details on that. But you at least know what to expect now, right? So now that we've covered the election laws that affect things, we want to talk specifically about petitioning now. What do you have to do to correctly petition? And, what's some good advice to do petitioning correctly? We'll talk about what supplies you need to do this correctly. And we'll give some good tips on how to work together with others for petitioning, how to choose a good place to petition. We were just talking about how you have a right to political speech and political canvassing. Where's the best place to do it? We can talk about that. We can talk about the icebreakers. So when you're asking people to sign your petition, what's the best way to approach them? What are some kind of tested and true methods for asking folks to sign? And we'll do a little bit of a Q&A there. You know, we've gotten some questions before, and we'll address some of the most common questions, including the pandemic's not over yet, so we still have to make safety considerations because of COVID. All right, so the first thing is petitioning supplies, and of course, that means you have to have the actual petition. So I have a picture, for example, of what our petition looks like in Pennsylvania. Of course, everyone's petition is going to look a little bit different from this, depending on the laws and requirements in your state party. but I think they mostly all look somewhat similar to this, that it's a some sort of legal form that you declare the name of the political party. So, you know, we write Green Party at the top. You put the candidate's information on there somewhere. So, you know, the name, the office they're running for. And then toward the bottom, you can, on the bottom right of the slide, you can see signatures of electors. In our state, electors are the word that they use for voters. So the voters would sign down there. They'd sign their name. They'd print their name. They'd write their address. And I see Harry holding up a, is that your petition in your state?
yeah, this is the petition to get Howie on the ballot for New York State.
Great. Yeah, there you go. So it looks vaguely similar to the one that we have here. I think most states are something like this. So, you know, there's basic information. So make sure that you have the correct petition for your state, or obviously it won't count. And as I was saying earlier, make sure it's printed on the right size paper. So like in Pennsylvania, for example, it has to be on legal size paper instead of letter size paper. So again, your state party or the candidate campaign will be able to advise you on that and get you the correct form. So when you get that, make sure that you follow the directions of the form exactly. So it might be things like make sure you're using only black or blue ink. You know, they won't take pencils or magic markers or something like that. Make sure that they're filling out all the boxes correctly, that they sign their name, they print their name, they write their address in the right spot. One complication on our Pennsylvania form, for example, and of course it varies by state, is if you look at the bottom right of this slide where there's the signature of the elector and there's a line, if you look at the very last box, it says the date of signing right after the place of residence. So what happens? People will, they'll write their name, they'll write their address, right? House number, street number, city they live in. And it's almost a reflex at this point that part of your address is your zip code. But notice that there is no box for the zip code here. So a common mistake is that someone will sign their address and then they'll write the zip code in the last box. But that's not what the box is asking for. It doesn't need a zip code. It needs the date that they're signing. So you want to make sure that you're familiar with the rules and exactly what information you need on this form so that it counts. And you'll want to walk people through this when you're asking them to sign and point things out like that. Like, you know, don't put your zip code. You know, today is May 8th. Please write May 8th there, you know, 5/8.
To give you one example on the New York state, the one way that they really try to trip you up is the last box here. It says town or city, except in NYC, enter county.
Yeah, right.
and for example, I live, when I write down my address, I write Deer Park, but I live in the town of Babylon. So my signature is invalid if I don't write Babylon in that box.
Right.
A kind of counterintuitive thing that most people won't realize. So what I do is I put a sticky note to cover that column. Mm-hmm. And then after I collect the signatures, we have a database that we have access to the New York State voter records. And I look those up and fill in what they're expecting in that box to make sure that it's right every time.
Gotcha.
It's a lot of extra work.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to do that. I even put a note in here, make a sticky note for the date, for example. You know, you could put a sticky note that says today is 5/8, for example, so that folks do that and they don't get confused about what day it is or whatever. So yeah, if you need to do sticky notes or something to remind folks, that's a great way to do it. You know, just make sure that folks are filling it out correctly as you go. And if they do make a mistake, usually you can just kind of draw a line through it and say, oh, could you please, you know, fill out the next line? You know, the state is very particular about these. So, you know, to make sure your signature counts, please, you know, do it the right way. So that's the form. Obviously, to make your experience better, you'll probably want some clipboards so it's easy to hand the form to people and have them sign while they're standing up or walking or whatever. You'll want to have some pens with you so that they can sign. You can't expect people to have pens on them. because COVID is still a thing, you'll want to wear your face mask and you'll want to have some hand sanitizer with you. And offering people who are signing, hey, you want some hand sanitizer is usually a good way to go. People generally appreciate that. You can even tell them to keep the pen if you have a bunch of cheap pens, whichever way you want to handle it. And then also consider the weather. Since this is all paper forms, the worst thing that happens is you'll collect a bunch of signatures on paper forms and then it rains and then your form gets all messed up. So make sure you have some kind of bag or something with you to keep it in and keep it safe from the rain, for example.
These clipboards are a little bit more expensive, but it is a plastic one that opens up and I can store the papers inside and protect them a little bit better.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Yeah, exactly. So the main thing, of course, is that we're petitioning to collect the signatures that are necessary to get our candidates on the ballot. But it's also an opportunity to introduce people to the Green Party. So, very often when you approach folks, and we'll talk more about the ways to approach them in a moment, but a common thing that you hear is, oh, I don't know who the Green Party is, or, tell me more about the Green Party or something like that. So it's usually a good idea to keep some flyers with you about who the Green Party is. And again, your state party or your candidate can probably get you some of this information. But keep some flyers with you. I have some photos here. Of the Green Party's key values, for example. There's a little pamphlet about the Green Party. There's a poster for the Green New Deal. These are all available on the GPUS website. If you go to the merchandise page, it's listed under merchandise, but it's free. You just click the flyers that you want, and it's a free download. You sign it up and you get the download, and you can print them yourself. But like I said, probably your state party or campaign already has some pre-printed, so you can ask for that too. But you can print your own if you need to. Have some literature with you so that you can hand it to them. One thing that we want to do while we're petitioning is to keep things moving real fast to try to collect as many signatures as we can. So very often, instead of getting sucked into a long conversation, you can invite people to check out the website, for example, and say, hey, read about the Green Party platform on the website. Here's a flyer about our key values or the Green New Deal or something. And hopefully that answers your questions. And if not, you can check our website, or sometimes it's good to have a sign up form, for a like an email list. And you could say, if you have any remaining questions, you can sign up for our email list and we can get in touch later. So having that sign up sheet to collect their email and phone number, and if they have any comments or questions or something, is usually a good thing to have too. And then if you want any extra swag or something, maybe you want to hand out buttons, for example, for your candidate, that's something else to ask the campaign if they have that. Sometimes they do. So next is, how do you find a place to petition? Where do you go to ask people to sign your petition? One of the nicest things is to start local. So start with your own neighbors. Go next door and knock doors in your apartment building or in your neighborhood or whatever, and talk to your neighbors about the candidate and ask them to sign the petition. That's the best place to start because it's building a local network of your own neighbors, right? People begin to know who you are and know who the Green Party is. And you can actually start to build a local Green Party there in your neighborhood over time by talking to folks. So that's probably the best place to start. But if you're also looking for kind of high traffic areas to collect a lot of signatures, there's some other places that you might consider. Farmers markets are often a great place. Usually a lot of people go in and out of farmers markets, and usually you could stand right outside of the farmers market and ask people to sign as they go in and out. Sometimes if the farmers market is friendly, they might even let you set up a table in the farmers market itself and catch people that are going by. So you can always ask if that's okay. Any public building is a good place. So like a post office, lots of people go in and out to check their mail or to mail things. If you have a busy post office near you, that might be a good option. Same for a library. If you have a busy local library near you, that's a good place to talk to average voters or just kind of walking by. You will want to make sure that they're actually registered voters, though, when you're talking to people in just kind of generic public spaces. Because not everyone is registered to vote. So that's actually a good reason that you might want to keep a couple of paper voter registration forms with you. In some states, you can have them fill out that form to register to vote, and then they can immediately sign your petition right there. So that's a consideration. Crowded city corners. If you're in a bigger city, this is a great place to do it. If you hang out near, for example, a bus stop, people are going in and out of the bus stop all day. And so you can collect a lot of people as they're passing by. Another great one is on election day. So most of the time Greens run in the general election, which is usually in November, but there's usually a primary election just for the Democrats and Republicans in the spring sometime, in April or May or somewhere around there. It depends on your state, of course, but often there's a primary election. And so if you're lucky enough to be in a state that has a primary election that falls during your petitioning window, that's a great place to collect signatures, because you can go outside of the polling location and you know everyone going in and out of there is a registered voter. So you have a very high probability of getting valid, good signatures. So you might want to consider that if that's an option to you. Courthouses and other government buildings, like I said, especially during kind of lunchtime or whatever during the week, is a good place. People go in and out of the government buildings to do whatever they're doing. Outside of grocery stores, you know, obviously everyone goes to grocery, they got to buy food. So that could be a good place, although be mindful that that's a private property situation, where if you're standing in the parking lot or something, you're technically on private property and they could ask you to leave, they could call the police or something like that if they get really upset. So you'll want to make sure that you're not on the private property, that you're standing on, for example, the sidewalk outside of the grocery store. If you know the people that run the supermarket or whatever, you can ask the manager if it's okay to stand there. And if they give you permission, then it's totally fine. But don't assume that you have permission. Same for any local events. If there's some special local event, a concert or whatever going on, you might stand outside the event and try to collect signatures. But again, be wary if it's on private property, right? Make sure that you stay on, for sure, public property when you're doing it, unless you have permission. So a good way to make sure you're on public property is I say, the sidewalk. The sidewalk is public property everywhere. So if you're on the sidewalk and you're not blocking people or whatever, then usually it's okay. And I already mentioned canvassing door to door. So you can go door to door to ask people to sign your petition. And the best neighborhood to do that is probably the one where you live, and to get to know your own neighbors and see if you can grow a Green Party in your community. I would also encourage folks to work in pairs so that you're not out by yourself for various reasons. You know, it could be partly for safety, but also partly so that you learn from someone who's more experienced. Again, your state party or the campaign can probably help set you up with someone to do that. So you can ask about it. But, you know, work with someone else, especially if you're in a very public, crowded location. Because then, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's so many people that you can't actually get to everyone with your clipboards. Like, even if you have two clipboards and you're trying the best to flag everyone down, you know, there's only so much one person can do. So if you know that you're going to be at a very crowded location, you might want to go with a couple other people to make sure that as a team, you're grabbing as many people as possible. Because if you're busy with your clipboard asking someone to sign, then while that person is signing, you know, you have however many people walking by that you're missing, that you're not even talking to. If you have a partner with you while you're busy, they could be grabbing those people. So, you know, it's good to pair up with some other people while you're doing this, particularly in very busy locations. All right. So we've talked about the locations and talking to the voters, but what exactly do you say to them? Well, it's kind of its own art. And there's no really like one approach to rule them all. It's more about what you're comfortable with. But you know, here's some example tips that work pretty well. You can use some icebreakers. So when you're standing there with your petition, your clipboard and all, you can ask folks if they're registered voters, for example. And if you get a positive response and they say, oh, yes, you know, then you might be able to stop them and tell them more about, you know, hey, I'm trying to get the Green Party on the ballot. and go from there. That's a good icebreaker, but one thing to consider is that it might turn some people off, because if they're already registered voters, they might think that you're only trying to register voters, because sometimes, you know, their voter registration drives. So they might say yes or no or whatever it is and just keep walking, because they're like, I don't want to get registered right now. So you might want to be more specific about what your ask is. You might want to say, hey, can you help me out with your signature? Can you help me put another choice on the ballot this November? One of our veteran petitioners here in Pittsburgh used to always say, would you sign saying that the Green Party has a right to be on the ballot? And that usually would catch a lot of people's attention, because most people believe in free and fair and open elections. They think everybody should be on the ballot. And so not only will they sign, but they'll ask, what do you mean that you're not on the ballot? Like, you know, how does that work? And so you can kind of explain what we were saying earlier, that Greens face a lot of extra ballot access hoops to jump through. And, you know, that gets people upset. And when they get upset about it, they're like, oh, of course I'll sign. You should be on the ballot. You know, that's actually a very common response. I see you holding something up there, Harry.
Yeah, I put a big sticker on the back of my clipboard. So even when I'm not speaking, like if I'm talking to one person, somebody walking by who already likes the Green Party might like pull over and ask when they're done or whatever.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, you can verbally ask people. And if you have a sign or a sticker or something like that, that's a great way to do it too. But, you know, let folks know what you're out there for. And some type of pitch that's something to do with like the Green Party on the ballot. Like, we have a right to be on the ballot. Can you help me get on the ballot? Can you sign this to put us on the ballot? Any sort of opening like that is usually a pretty good one that will get folks' attention, and they'll stop and they'll ask more about it, and they'll usually sign. So, you know, these are a few opening options. When you're making this pitch, one good thing to do is to try to target a group of people that are walking by. So instead of just one person, especially if they look distracted on a cell phone or something like that, that's maybe not the right thing. But if you see a group of three or four people or something, approach the group and say, hey, do you want to have the, you know, do you believe in the right that the Green Party should be on the ballot or something like that, you know? And that way more people are hearing your pitch at the same time, right? It's not just for one person, it's a group. And, you know, the group will hear it. And especially if you have your partner there, right? If you've got like four clipboards and you stop four people, you can hand them all a clipboard, right? And you get four signatures right there with one pitch. So you want to look for opportunities like that as people are walking by. So that's kind of your opening pitch. And once you get their attention, they might ask you more questions. They might not. They might just sign and move on and thank them for that, if so, and then move on to your next person, right? Keep collecting signatures. But sometimes they might have questions for you. They might ask, like, you know, who is this candidate? What do they stand for? And sometimes you might even hear people ask, who is the Green Party? As much as, you know, Democrats attack us in the media and everything's Jill Stein's fault and all that stuff. Not everyone actually pays attention to all that, right? They're not watching CNN and Fox News and all that stuff all the time. And so there's a lot of people out there who just don't know much about the Green Party in general. And if we can reach them and tell them what our message is, a lot of those folks might be people who gave up on the Democratic Party, gave up on the duopoly. And if we tell them, no, you've got another choice, they didn't even know they had a choice. And so they're willing to sign. They might even be willing to get involved. So they might have some follow-up questions is my point here. So here's a couple of the common responses that I've personally heard and seen, and kind of some tips on how to handle it. First one is, you know, tell me more about the candidate or the Green Party. So like I said, really our goal here is that we want to collect as many signatures as we can as quickly as possible, because we're trying to meet our deadlines and our requirements. But of course you don't want to be rude. So what you want to try to do is respond to them, but keep it short. So, you know, a good way to talk about it, for example, is that, you know, we're a party that supports our four pillars, you know, democracy, ecology, justice, peace. You could say that, you know, we're a party that supports healthcare, Medicare for all, the environment, and a Green New Deal, and social justice, or something like that. You can keep it short like that and then hand them the literature that we were talking about a moment ago and, you know, invite them to read more, check out the website, and to contact you if they have any questions in the future. The important thing is to try not to get sucked into too deep of a conversation, and especially not a debate. You don't want to debate anyone right there. If they start getting funny about, you know, oh, well, what do you mean about this? And collecting signatures is not really the place to do that. So you can just hand them some literature and say, you know, these are our stances and check it out and feel free to contact us later. And then, you know, get back to petitioning. But that said, I don't want to scare anyone because in my personal experience and a lot of folks' experience, the people that want to debate or whatever are not actually that common. Most people are actually pretty friendly, and they'll sign or they'll ask a friendly question and they'll take a flyer, and it's not a big deal. So the best thing you can do is just kind of give the flyer and direct them to the website and then keep petitioning. What if someone asks a question that I can't answer? That's perfectly okay. You know, you're not expected to know everything. Just say that you're a volunteer and that you don't know, and that, you know, here's some literature, check out the website, contact us later if you have questions. Sometimes they might say, you know, no thanks, or I'm not interested in signing, whatever it is, and that's okay. You know, don't feel upset or angry or, you know, whatever. Just thank them for their time and move on and get more people, you know. Don't stress over one signature when there's, you know, 100 more people coming down the sidewalk, right? just keep trying to talk to as many people as you can. What if they get rude or angry? Like I said, that very rarely happens. You know, most of the time people are very friendly and they're actually very excited to learn about the Green Party. Most people are actually very upset with the Republicans and Democrats. I remember one year when I was petitioning, I specifically asked people, you know, what do you think is a top issue that you'd like to see people address this day? And I got from both Democrats and Republicans the answer of corruption. They both were like, I don't think the party listens to me, and I'm not really happy with that. So, you know, that's a great opening about, like, well, we're a separate party. We're a separate alternative. We, you know, we don't like how either of them worked either. You know, so
we don't take any corporate money at all, ever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We don't take corporate money. You know, we don't support those parties. We don't support what they're doing, all that stuff. So honestly, you know, you make a lot more friends and all than anything else, right? People are generally pretty friendly. Even if they're not Greens themselves, they might even tell you, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat or whatever, but they're usually not mean or rude. And in fact, like I said, when you talk about the Green Party has a right to be on the ballot, they'll even agree with that. They'll say, well, I probably won't vote Green, but you do have a right to be on the ballot. And they'll still sign your petition. And they're still fine with that. So, you know, keep that in mind, that you're not asking them to sign to support the Green candidate. You're asking them to support fair elections, right? Fair ballot access. And if anyone does get a little bit rowdy about that, just thank them for their time and say, you know, that's okay. We appreciate your point of view. And then move on and start collecting signatures from other people. Try to talk to other folks. Sometimes a question comes up because you're asking them to sign a petition. They'll say, what do you want all this information for? Why do you want my address? You know, stuff like that. And so it's honestly a pretty legit question, right? If somebody's out there saying, I want you to sign this legal looking form, what is that for? Right. I didn't just sign away $10,000, did I? So, excuse me. So you can let them know it's a requirement of ballot access law in your state, and that you're only collecting the information, their name and address, solely to verify that they are a registered voter. And that's it. It will not be used for any other purpose. And usually that's an okay answer, and, you know, they'll sign. They might ask to, like, read a copy of the petition. If so, you know, hand them a clipboard and say, read it over here, and then you get back to collecting signatures. You know, they can spend as much time as they want reading it, but don't let them slow you down, right? Keep getting signatures until they decide what they want to do about it. And again, it's okay if they don't want to sign. Thank them for their time and move on and collect signatures. All right. So those are some common responses. We have to address the ongoing pandemic. So, you know, again, just kind of a reminder that, you know, the pandemic is here. The Omicron variant is getting more ridiculous. So please be safe. You know, please protect yourself and others in public. you know, make sure that you're wearing face masks, use hand sanitizer. You can keep fresh pens, like we were saying. You can let people keep the pens if you want. Otherwise, make sure you're sanitizing them between use. And try to keep it as contact-free as possible. You know, you might set up a little portable table, for example, in an event and have all the clipboards down there and, you know, try to keep your distance from them. So, you know, try to do the best you can. And in all of our petitioning across the country over the last couple of years during the pandemic, I don't think any petitioners have gotten sick as far as I know, because they've been taking these precautions. So, you know, obviously be careful. But if you're doing this stuff, you know, you're probably in pretty good shape. All right. So last bit about petitioning, is make sure that you wrap up your paperwork correctly. So after you've been out for a few hours or whatever, and you've collected your signatures, like Harry was saying a moment ago, you'll want to double check later on. You want to go through and see, is any of it illegible or incomplete? Can I not read this or whatever? And try to get a sense of how many real signatures you have, so to speak, versus ones that might not be valid because they can't be read or whatever the case is. The campaign or your petition coordinator that you're talking to will probably want how many signatures did you collect? And so, you know, it's good to know how many that you're sitting on and give them accurate numbers. A lot of times these petitions will have the person who is collecting the signatures will have to sign saying, yes, I was the person that collected these signatures on the back of the form, but you don't sign that until you're done collecting signatures. Because once you sign saying I collected them, you can't add more signatures to it, or otherwise they're invalid. They could be thrown out in court or whatever. So make sure that you're finalizing your paperwork and filling out that circulator statement after you're done collecting signatures, if that's a requirement in your state. And then, of course, make sure that you're getting the petition back to the campaign as quickly as possible. You know, don't sit on it to where it might get lost or something. Try to get it back to them immediately. A lot of times, if there's a specific petitioning event, you might be able to hand it to the petition coordinator right there, you know, before you leave. But if you're doing it on your own in your neighborhood or something like that, make sure that you ask, you know, who do I turn this into, and try to get it to them as soon as possible. So that's a little breaking point here. Are there any questions on this? Not sure if I could see the chat room here. Okay. Oh, is that showing up here in the chat? Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Going forward. Okay. So that was an overview of what to expect as an individual petitioner, that you'll be out collecting signatures on your form, some common responses that you'll hear from people when you approach them, some ways to break the ice when you approach them, and just kind of an overview of what sort of supplies you might need and answers you could give them. A lot of campaigns probably need not just individuals that are collecting signatures, but also coordinators, people that are making sure that all the individuals have all the things that they need in order to be successful. So our last little bit of this presentation here is about being a coordinator. If you have the time to volunteer to be a coordinator, you know, this is a good way to help the campaign and the party make sure that it reaches its goals. So we'll talk about, you know, petitioning goals. We'll talk about coordinating stuff, and how to manage volunteers and track volunteers and petitions. So the first is to know your petitioning goals. So like we said at the very beginning of this, every state, 50 states plus DC, has its own set of rules. So you'll want to make sure that you know what the goals are, what the minimum number of signatures are. And you can actually do some calculations that if you're going door to door, for example, or if it's a kind of a low volume flow, you can calculate that the average person will collect around 10 signatures per hour if they're in kind of that low volume or door to door. If you're in more of a high volume spot and you've got your two clipboards and you're getting people at all, you can expect more like 20, 25 signatures per hour. Per person, right? So you can use this to kind of estimate how many volunteers do we need and how many volunteer hours do we need in order to reach our minimum goal. So you'll want to set that. You'll want to set how many volunteers we need, how many hours do we need to be out petitioning, roughly speaking, to reach our minimum. And then, you know, look at your time frame, however much time you have that, and try to figure out how many signatures per week do we need to get to stay on target and reach it. And that's a good way to keep track of volunteers, because then you'll know something like, you know, we need 10 volunteers per week from now until July or whatever it is, right? And then you can call people, you can text people, you can follow up with past volunteers with the Green Party and ask them if they're willing to put in an hour or two and you know, build up to reach those goals. So I give an example of where we're at in Pennsylvania. Our statewide candidate needs about 5,000 signatures, which is more than some states, but also a lot less than some others. New York in particular, you know, I have to say good luck to you, Harry, because New York is facing 45,000 signatures in a few weeks. It's a really tall order. It used to not be that bad, but it's a lot worse this year because the Democratic governor made the requirements tripled. You know, it takes a lot of coordinating for sure. So if you want to be a coordinator, if you want to help with the Hawkins campaign in New York, if you're there, I'm sure they need not just volunteers but coordinators. But whatever state you're in, this is a good role to be in. Somebody who is willing to contact the volunteers and get them signed up to collect signatures for an hour or two a week or whatever it is to make sure that you're reaching your goal. Ideally, you would want to contact people and ask, you know, are you willing to petition in your neighborhood, or, you know, would you join us? Like, especially if they're new at petitioning, they might be kind of afraid to do it on their own. So it's great to have these kind of intro events where you target some event that you're pretty sure is going to draw a lot of people. Or, you know, a really busy bus stop or something like that, right? But you pick a day and you say, you know, a bunch of us Greens are going to meet here together and we're going to petition together. And so if you're new to petitioning, this is a great place for you to join, and you can help us out and you can learn from some people who have done it before and, you know, get the swing of things. So you might want to look for some interesting events in your neighborhood. You can look in community newspapers or newsletters, especially for kind of allied activist groups. You know, Greens work with, you know, various environmental justice groups and peace groups and whatever. And some of those groups might have some kind of event that you can go there and you can petition. Again, keep in mind the whole private property thing, and it's good to not step on people's toes, and, you know, you should ask permission and things like that. Especially if it's a friendly group, right? You don't want to accidentally upset them, you know, say, hey, is it okay if we have a table there? And a lot of times they'll say, yeah, go ahead, have a table. That sounds great. So you could set up events like that. You could look for holiday events, for example. Well, Earth Day just passed, but Earth Day is often a very good day to look for events, because there's usually a lot of public community events that you can go to. And, you know, what better day to talk about green values than Earth Day? As I mentioned earlier, the primary election is often a very good place. So we're doing that in Pennsylvania, that the primary election is in a couple of weeks. And, you know, we're trying to get people to sign up to go to their local polling location for an hour before work or something. And, you know, you just stand there and ask people go in and out, ask them to sign a petition. And like we were saying earlier, even though they're primary voters, they're Democrats and Republicans, most of the time they're pretty friendly and they want to know more about the Green Party. They'll tell you how much that they're not really happy with their choices. Sometimes they come out of the polling booth, right? And they're like, man, that was a terrible primary. I didn't like any of those people. And, you know, that's a great opportunity to talk to them about, well, you can have another choice in November. Would you sign a petition? You know, and you can also ask party members themselves, right? A lot of our local Green Party members are in those other activist groups and things, and so they might have suggestions. Yeah, and lastly, like I said, even just doing a door-to-door canvassing is good, because that's something we should all get used to as Greens. That when you're doing petitioning, you're trying to move a little bit faster, of course, to get signatures on the deadline. But ultimately, we should be regularly canvassing a lot of our neighborhoods and not just quickly collecting signatures, but doing what's known as deep canvassing, where we're having really deep conversations with our neighbors about what kind of society we want to live in. And, you know, what are the problems does our community face, and how can we work together to fix them? And that's where we're going to really organize and build a Green Party. So I think there's going to be future trainings on deep canvassing. But that's something to keep in mind, Dad, that we should get used to talking to our neighbors about these political issues. And one way to get started is having canvassing days in certain neighborhoods where we know that there's Greens. Go knock on the doors of registered Greens and say, hey, you want to join us, right? And then otherwise, talk to other people in the neighborhood about the Green Party. And if you're doing it together as a group, it's again, another great opportunity for people that are new to it to learn from you know, people that have more experience. You can use fancy CRM systems, like there's like Civi CRM or Nation Builder or whatever, to track your volunteers. But if you have to, you can just use a spreadsheet. And so example, here's a spreadsheet from a few years ago where we were tracking a bunch of events in Pittsburgh. And so we have like the day and the time of the event and the address. And then we kind of collect some names off to the right about like, oh, these two or three people said that they would be available for this. And, you know, we were trying to figure out where to best put people to get signatures to meet our requirements. So you can always do something like this, you know, whatever helps you keep track of your volunteers and events and your petition signature numbers. You'll want to check in with your volunteers once a week or so and ask them, you know, how many signatures do you have? And, you know, are you planning to go out this week? You know, can we help you with anything? Do you need more petitions? Do you need more supplies? We can help get that. You'll want to check in with that stuff. So speaking of supplies, you know, make sure that your petitioners have all the supplies. And so this is something campaigns and state parties can do with their fundraising. They can raise the money to pay to print copies of the petitions and the flyers and to buy a whole bunch of clipboards and to buy the fancy clipboards just in case it rains, right? And all this stuff. So if you're working with a campaign or a state party, you'll want to make sure that you're fundraising and you're spending on doing things like that, right? Print the petition on the right size form and all that stuff like we talked about. You know, you might want to make a little instruction form to give to new people so that they know how to fill out the petition form and maybe those FAQ questions that we were talking about earlier, you know, so that they have a little bit of guidance while they're collecting signatures. You know, get clipboards, get pens, get hand sanitizer, give every volunteer a little hand sanitizer, right? Print out party literature so that if people have questions, they can look at the literature. And you might even make t-shirts or buttons or something like that. You know, we have a Green Party Pennsylvania t-shirt, for example. So you can encourage folks to wear that while they're petitioning. And you also, of course, want to make sure that all volunteers have all of the event details. So if you're asking them to go to petition or I'm sorry, to go table at an event, for example, set up a table and ask people to sign petitions, you know, they should know when's the event, what time should I be there, where's my table? Like if it's a big event that has booths, right? Numbered booths, you know, which number is where I set up a table and, you know, all the details about how they get set up. And then also the details about how to close it down. You know, who's going to take down the table? Who's going to make sure that they collect the petitions and get them back to the campaign? You want to make sure that all of those details are arranged ahead of time so that there's not confusion at the event. You know, the people go there and then they say, oh, I got to leave in an hour. And then they run off with their petitions and you never see the petitions again. And nobody thinks to pick up the table. And so the table gets left there and, you know, you don't want that situation. So make sure that you have all your details before you're asking your volunteers to do that. One thing that comes up is paid petitioning. As you can kind of imagine by this point, petitioning can be pretty involved. And so some people will sign up for just an hour or two, and that's okay. But you know, depending on the signature requirements we're looking at, we might be looking at lots and lots of volunteer hours. And a lot of people just, you know, don't have that amount of free time to volunteer, even if they want to. So one way that we can do it is, you know, folks that are looking for part-time jobs, we can pay some of our Greens, right, to I don't know, I guess you call it mutual aid. some greens that need a little bit of extra cash and they have more free time, we can try to, we can compensate them fairly for all of the time that they spend on doing the petitioning. So you'll want to ask your campaign or your state party if they can support paid petitioners, if they fundraise to do that. And you'll want to talk with them about it, because maybe when you're recruiting volunteers, you could tell them, hey, we're paying $20 an hour. Would you sign up to do 2 hours on Saturday or something like that? And sometimes that could be not only a good incentive, but I think it just sets the right tone, right? That we're, you know, we're not expecting people to do stuff for free, that, you know, we're compensating people fairly for their time and their skills and their energy and all that. So it seems to be a thing that more and more state parties are doing. And yeah, so you'll want to ask about that. it depends on your conditions in your state party. And there is some tax things involved in that, right? That, like, you're considered a contractor. So I think it would be like a 1099 that you would get, and you'd have to declare it on your taxes, and the campaign has to say that they paid it to you and all that stuff. So there's some things that need to happen for that. It's not necessarily an easy, hey, we'll give you $20. So check with the campaign first, but this is often a good thing to think about. And if you're working as an organizer for these campaigns, you might even pitch it to them. You might even say, hey, if we raise some money, you know, we can pay folks to do this, and that'll help us meet our goals quicker and easier. And just to be more fair to our volunteers, we're not expecting them to do all this stuff for free. All right. So any questions there? Let's see if I can pull up the chat window again. All right, chat. All right. So, yeah, New York needs 45,000. All right. Yeah, so that is the stuff about organizing. So I think we've pretty much covered all the stuff that I wanted to talk about. We talked about a lot today, so let's summarize that real quick. We started with ballot access laws. We pointed out that there's really not one election. There are 50 states plus DC elections every year in the US. And some of them are on different timelines. They have different requirements to be on the ballot. And it's kind of a mess. And that's part of our challenge as the Green Party to coordinate all that. That the Green Party is not one national party. It's 50 state parties plus the DC party, right? Because we have to coordinate and follow all of these ballot access laws. So they vary depending on the state, but there's some very basic outlines that usually in every state, you have to collect signatures on a petition and pay some filing fee to be on the ballot. And the number of signatures and the amount of the filing fee vary wildly. Some states it's cheap with fewer signatures. Some states it's outrageous amounts of signatures and outrageous amounts of money. So we try our best to reach all of those different conditions. You know, Oklahoma required $35,000, I think, just to be on the ballot. New York, as we were saying, now has to collect 45,000 signatures in like 8 weeks or 6 weeks or something. I forget exactly what it is. But the point is, and I've heard Howie Hawkins talk about this, that it's worse than the Putin standard, as he put it, that to run for office in Putin's Russia is actually less requirements than what New York now requires. So New York is now facing some of the worst ballot access laws in the world at this point. So that's part of our challenge. And while that is, of course, upsetting, and it shouldn't be that way, and as Greens, we should be demanding that we have fair, equitable ballot access laws that promote democracy instead of trying to keep people off the ballot, we should also take that as an opportunity of, we really need to organize and build our parties anyway. And if we want to build a movement that's really gonna shake up the system and change things, we need to build one strong enough to be able to do this anyway. So while it's not right, it's also something that we can organize and we can win and we can get around. And it just takes all of us getting involved, which is why I'm really excited and glad for folks that are watching this, that you're interested in petitioning and volunteering with your state party, because that's how we overcome this. That's how we win. That's how we get system change. It's how we get Medicare for All and a Green New Deal and all the whole Green Party platform. all of us coming together and volunteering and doing our part in building this big movement. So we can overcome those ballot access challenges. And as a petitioner, you know, you can go collect signatures at various places. We talked about doing either door-to-door door knocking and talking to your neighbors, as well as talking at picking a good event where you can go and collect signatures. We talked about some icebreakers and how you can approach people, especially by talking about fairness on the ballot. That's something that really resonates with a lot of people and can get their attention, and they'll usually sign your petition. We talked about the supplies you need. We talked about some common responses you might get from people and what you can do about it, how you can respond. And lastly, we talked about some tips for organizers, for folks who want to go above just volunteering to collect signatures, who want to get involved with their state party and their the candidate campaign to be an organizer and to help turn out more volunteers to make sure that it's successful. So especially if you're willing to take that on, you know, thank you again for helping build the movement, because as a grassroots party, like Harry said earlier, we don't take corporate money, right? We are not the Democrats and Republicans. We are built on grassroots volunteers and support and effort. And, you know, our goal is to be a mass working class party that represents the people and not corporations and the wealthy and all that stuff, right? And so again, there's a lot of challenges, but we can overcome them together by building a working class movement together. So again, thank you so much for volunteering to either petition or to get more involved in organizing with your state party or campaign. So I hope that this presentation was a good 101 that gives you some good ideas about what to expect. I of course encourage you to talk to your state party or your campaign about if there's any gaps to fill in. We covered state law, for example, very generically, and there can be specific rules in each state that I don't know about. I don't know all 51 state laws. So, you know, you want to make sure that you check with them if there's any special things that you need to do in your state. But we covered most of the basics, so you're pretty you're in a good position now to get started. So reach out to your state party and campaign if you haven't, and get involved. And again, thank you for being involved in building this movement at this critical time, and not just U.S. history, but also really world history, global history. I don't know if there's any lingering questions here. I think we answered a lot of stuff, even as part of the presentation. So I suppose with that, I'll thank you all one last time and let you go, and hope you enjoy the day and hope to see you out petitioning. Before I wrap up, I should say this cheat. The Green Socialist Organizing Project campaign trainings, it's on the screen right now. This presentation was part of the campaign training series, which is ongoing for the next few months. It's a combination of practical trainings, like today we talked about petitioning, but also issue trainings, so that if you are a activist, organizer, or a candidate running for office, you'll know how to talk about issues with voters from a green perspective. So our next training is going to be on Medicare for All in a few weeks. I apologize, I forget exactly what day it's on. But if you go to that link there, greensocialist.net/campaign-trainings, you can see the full list of all the upcoming trainings. So there's going to be one on Medicare for All. There's going to be a training on doing media and communications. Howie did one on the Green New Deal previously. So if you missed that, you can find the link to the recording and catch up on that. So, you know, there's some really great trainings coming up, and check that out and sign up for it. There's also a 101 series that the Green Socialist Organizing Project is putting on. It's a series of three 101s. There's Green Party 101. So folks that are new to the Green Party can learn about the history and structure of the Green Party. There's a Socialism 101, which is about eco-socialism, and what does that mean from a green perspective? And then there's finally organizing 101, the basics of how to get involved as an organizer. So we touched on some of those ideas today as a petitioner with talking about canvassing, deep canvassing and all. But if you want to have some more details about where to get started on those things, you'll want to sign up for the next organizing 101. And you can find those 101 links to register for future 101 trainings at the greensocialist.net website too. So there's a lot of really exciting stuff coming up. Those all be, you know, live streams and on Zoom, and you can ask questions and all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you are too.